कृष्ण जन्माष्टमी और श्री गुरु गुरंग ओम कृष्ण साय पुत्रे श्रीमती भक्ति गुणांत स्वामी के नाम नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाने पछाने ने विशेष शून्य वाले पास चले सचा श्री कृष्ण ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 39. This is the prayers by the demigods of Krishna in the womb of Mother Devaki. Before I start, I just want to say again how just incredibly wonderful everything is today. And I think one of our real opulences here, Nuram and Redi, besides the most beautiful deities in the world that we all acknowledge, is also the wonderful devotional service of all the devotees who even make them even more beautiful and enhance them so much. It's just every time the altar opens on these festival days, it's like breathtaking, isn't it? So thank you again for all the bhakti that we see today. So, Tatevasyeshavashyakaranam Vina vinodam batatara kayamahe Bhavo naroda stitir apya vidyaya Kvita yatastvaya vyashrayatmani Nate bhavashyesha bhavashyakaranam Vina vinodam batatara kayame Bhavo narodha stitir apya vidyaya Vrita yatastvaya vyashrayatmane Others? Ladies. Thank you. Word for word. Na,
na,
not.
Na,
te,
te,
of your lordship.
Lordship.
Abhavashya,
of
whom there is no birth.
Of whom there is no birth.
death or maintenance as for an ordinary being. Isha, O Supreme Lord, Bhavasya, of your appearance, your birth, Karanam, the cause, Dina, without, Vinodam, the pastimes. Despite what is said, you are not forced to come to this world by any cause. But, however, Tarkaya Mahe, we cannot argue, but must simply understand that these are your pastimes. Bhava, birth. Niroda, death. Stiti, maintenance. Api, also. Avidyaya, by the external illusory energy. Rita, done. Yata, because. Twai, unto you. Abhaya Ashraya, O fearless shelter of all. Atmani, of the ordinary living entity. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no other cause than your pleasure potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. Report. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15.7 of Maivangcho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and thus they are qualitatively one with the Lord. We can understand that when the Supreme Lord appears or disappears as an incarnation, there is no other cause than His pleasure potency. We cannot force the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear, as He says in Bhagavad Gita, Yada yada dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya yadatmanam shujam yaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. When there is a need to diminish a burden created by the demons, the Supreme Godhead can do it in many ways because He has multifarious energies. There is no need for Him to come as an incarnation, since He is not forced to do anything like ordinary living entities. The living entities come to this material world in the spirit of enjoyment, but because they want to enjoy without Krishna, they suffer birth, death, old age, and disease under the control of illusory energy. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, however, no such causes are involved. His descent is an act of His pleasure potency. We should always remember this distinction between the Lord and the ordinary living entity, and not uselessly argue that the Lord cannot come. There are philosophers who do not believe in the Lord's incarnation and who ask, why should the Supreme Lord come? But the answer is, why should He not come? Why should He be controlled by the desire of the living entity? The Lord is free to do whatever He likes. Therefore, this verse says, Vina vinodam bhatitarkaya mahe. It is only for His pleasure that He comes, although He does not need to come. When the living entities come to this material world for material enjoyment, they're entangled in karma and karmapala by the Lord's illusory energy. But if one seeks shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, he is again situated in his original liberated state. It is stated here, Krita yatas tva yabhiyashrayatmani. One who seeks shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is always fearless. Because we are dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should give up the idea that without Krishna we can enjoy freedom in the material world. This idea is the reason we have become entangled. Now it is our duty to seek shelter again at the Lord's lotus feet. This shelter is described as abhaya, or fearless. Since Krishna is not subject to birth, death, old age, or disease, and since we are part and parcel of Krishna, we are also not subject to birth, death, old age and disease. But we become subject to these illusory problems because of our forgetfulness of Krishna and our position as the eternal servants. Jivera Sarupaya Krishnera Nichidas. Therefore, if we practice devotional service by always thinking of the Lord, always glorifying him, and always chanting about him, as described in text 37, Shinvan Grinan Samsmarayangs Chachintaya, we will be reinstated in our original constitutional position and thus be saved. The demigods, therefore, encourage Devaki not to fear Kamsa, but to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who was already within her womb. Om Gyanata Vrandasha Gyananjana Sarakaya Chaksar Mimitamena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Chubhishcha Kripa Sindhu Bebacha Patitano Pavanadyo Vaishnavevi Vino Namaha. So on this very wonderful and auspicious appearance day of Lord Sri Krishna, we are hearing the prayers of the demigods while he was in the womb of Devaki. And here we have a description of Krishna's appearance and how that contrasts with appearance and activities of the living entities. We see that Krishna is not bound by material laws. He does not come under the influence of karma or the modes of nature, but he is completely free and independent of those laws and acts on his own sweet will. And it also, this purport indicates how Krishna's appearance can liberate the suffering jiva. So we need to appreciate the appearance of the Lord today, his activities, and also what this means to us, how Krishna has come for our benediction, for our liberation. So we know a little of the history, which we heard recited in verse just a few minutes ago, that Bhumi, the goddess of the earth, approached Brahma, because the earth was overburdened by military power of the demons. Brahma, Shiva, and the demigods all went to pray to Lord Vishnu, and they were to take birth in the Yadu dynasty for his advent, as Krishna said he will come to deliver them from this burden. Then we know that, of course, on the wedding day of Devaki and Vasudeva, Devaki's brother Kamsa heard a voice in the sky and warned him that the eighth child of Devaki would kill him. So six sons are born. This is the very fast version of the fast time, condensed. Six sons were born. They were all killed by Kamsa. The seventh child of Devaki was transferred by Yogamaya to the womb of Rohini, and of course that was Balaram. And then the eighth child, Krishna, appeared in the heart of Vasudeva and then was transferred to the heart of Devaki. And then as Krishna was from the heart transferred to the womb, of course, not as an ordinary child, but in acting out this spiritual transcendental pastime, Devaki appeared very effulgent. And the demigods could understand that Krishna was about to take birth. And therefore, they're offering these prayers of glorification. In the verse that we read, it is stating that Krishna comes according to his own will, that he is not in any way under the influence of material nature. In fact, he is the controller of material nature, controller of those laws, controller of the modes. In the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear that Krishna is of his many qualities. One is he is Svarat. What does Svarat mean? Independent. He is completely independent. So even though he appears as a human being enacting these pastimes, he should never be considered an ordinary person, but he's always transcendental. At the end of chapter 1, which is one of the few places that Śrīla Prabhupāda does this, he writes several pages of notes, particularly in chapter 1, explaining many of the different principles, and which is very, very nice. And in one of these notes, he explains, talking about verse 10.1.7, this word maya manushyasya. So this maya manushyasya means that Krishna comes in the form of a human being. He looks like a human being. He acts like a human being. But Śrīla Prabhupāda carefully explains how he is never an ordinary human being. He is completely transcendental. He does not take birth like we do. But yet, as we heard, he simply entered the mind of Vasudeva, transferred the mind of Devaki, and he came in that way. It's also described that this is all happening by the internal potency of the Lord, by the Yogamaya potency. It is not happening by ordinary material nature. So people don't always understand this, and they think that Krishna is just some historical personality or some demigod or whatever he may be. But the Bhagavad Gita tells us in 7:25, the ham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita mudhoyam navajananti lokamam ajam avyayam. Krishna says, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, yogamaya, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. So of course this unborn means that he does not take birth in an ordinary way. So today's appearance day of Krishna, and that's why we call it appearance day. We don't say he took birth exactly, because that connotes an ordinary birth, as we all took birth, you know, through the womb of a mother, etc. So rather than saying he took birth, we say that Krishna appeared on this day. And of course, his appearance is quite rare. We may think that it was only 5,000 years ago. In historical time, it's very recent. We're very fortunate to be in this time period where Krishna personally appeared just a few short 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan. But actually, according to the Chaitanya-charitamrita, the third chapter confirms that it's actually only once in a day of Brahma that Krishna comes himself. Of course, he comes every yuga in different scheduled incarnations, but in the personal form, the supreme form of Krishna, he only comes during the Dwapara Yuga, during the 28th Yuga cycle of the 7th Manu, the Svayambhuva Manu. So that means it's every 4,320,000,000 years, right? It's once in a day of Brahma. So every 4 billion years, Krishna comes in this beautiful form to our planet, to this earth planet, and appears. So... Oh, that's right. That's just the day of Brahma. And his night is equally as long. Good point. So it's actually twice that long. But the, Prabhupada says in the purport, well, he actually says, yes, a day is 4,320,000,000 years. Okay. So what is Krishna's real position if he's not bound by material nature, if he's not an ordinary human being? He describes this in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It says, Ajopi san avyatma bhutanam ishwaropi san prakritim sva adishtaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. Although I'm unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I'm the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. And our Vaishnava understanding of Krishna is not just that Krishna's an incarnation or that, you know, an expansion. Some people think that Krishna is an incarnation, expansion of Vishnu, but actually it's the other way around, and Prabhupada explains it very clearly. Especially in the first chapter of the 10th canto, that Krishna is that original Supreme Personality, that all other incarnations, all other forms, all plenary expansions, everyone else are simply coming from him. And of course, in the Paribhashya Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28, this is very clearly explained. This is one of the most important verses of the Bhagavatam that all the understanding of Krishna's position expands from. Where it said, Ete chamsa kala punsam krishnas tu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakulam lokam vidayanti yuge yuge. All of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. So this is the Vaishnava understanding of Krishna. That Krishna is that supreme, original personality of Godhead, that all other incarnations, all energies, all expansions, everything is emanating from. So it's almost inconceivable that this is the original personality of Godhead, that everything is coming from, but yet he appears in this beautiful form that we can understand and appreciate and relish his pastimes. So Krishna does come out of his great mercy. Why does he come to this earth planet? He's happily situated in Goloka Vrindavan, engaged in eternal pastimes with all of his associates in Goloka. He comes to this material world for us. He actually comes to deliver the fallen souls who have left him, who have left Krishna Loka. And Bhagavad Gita 4.7 explains, Yadayadai dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhutanam dharmasya tadatmana shujamyaham. Whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice, or descend in bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. And in the next verse he gives the three specific reasons why Krishna advents. Purchanaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharmasamstapanartayo sambhavati yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So, just see if everybody's awake. What are the three reasons Krishna comes? What's one? I can't hear anybody. So somebody raise your hand and say, what are the three reasons Krishna appears? Yeah. Kill the demons, annihilate the miscreants. What else? Save the devotees and reestablish the principles of religion. How did he do this? Well, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He reestablished the Bhagavad Gita. He established the principles of religion. We know he killed many, many demons in Vrindavan, in Mathura, in Dwarka. But most importantly, he came to for his devotees. In the purport, the 4H, Srila Prabhupada explains that it was not necessary for Krishna to come to kill the demons. Prabhupada says, as far as the atheistic are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees. Who are always harassed by the demoniac. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was a sister of Kamsa, she and her husband Vasudeva were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born to them. So the Lord appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than to kill Kamsa. But both were performed simultaneously. So Krishna, of course, being, you know, the master planner of everything, who has created everything, he performs his activities and his pastimes to simultaneously accomplish many purposes. So yes, he killed Kamsa, he restored religion, he got rid of all the miscreant demons, but primarily, Prabhupada said he came to deliver Devaki. He came, and of course, to give pleasure to all of his devotees, to all of his associates. So he appears for his own pleasure and also for the pleasure of the devotees to engage in those loving pastimes. So the jiva, the conditioned soul, the eternally liberated soul, is always under the energy of God. And Krishna is performing so many of these activities, and these loving relationships are there by Krishna in all of his different incarnations and all of his different forms and all of his different activities and varieties. But the culmination of those personal relationships is most acutely shown and is the most sweetly enacted in his Vrindavan Leela, in his pastimes as Krishna with his devotees. In Mathura and Dwarka, yes, but particularly in Vrindavan. We know that there are three types of leelas that Krishna performs: his Ishvara Leela, Audarya pastimes, and his Madhurya pastimes. The Ishvara Leela is his awe and reverence, his majesty, such as when he is Narayan or Vishnu. And devotees worship him in that mood of awe and reverence. His Audarya pastimes are his most merciful pastimes, and those are best exhibited by the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who delivers the conditioned souls and shows his great mercy and embodies the mercy of Radharani. But his Madhurya pastimes are those pastimes of great sweetness. And the devotees very, very much relish those, because those sweet Vrindavan pastimes captivate the hearts of everyone. Just as we see this beautiful swing festival, this pastime of Krishna and Radharani and all of their associates. How beautiful and wonderful this is, and how captivating this is to us. So our hearts are drawn to Krishna naturally by all of his wonderful qualities, which he exhibits in full. Actually, only in Vrindavan as his Krishna manifestation. I don't want to say incarnation or expansion, because this is Krishna's original form in Vrindavan. We know that Krishna has 64 qualities described in Nectar Devotion. The living entities, if they are fully purified, can exhibit up to how many? 50. Can have up to 50 of these qualities. And Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma can exhibit how many more? 55. And Lord Narayan exhibits up to 60, another 5. So there are 4 qualities that only Krishna has. They're only found in Krishna, of all these wonderful qualities. Okay, raise your hands. Let's name them. 1. Playing his flute. Only Krishna tracks hearing from his flute. Any others? How about some of the students? Oh, that was the one they knew. What, you know any of the others? Krishna's qualities that only he has? You might guess them. Yes. Yes, he has very extraordinary, wonderful pastimes, and particularly his childhood pastimes are mentioned. No other incarnation has this variety of wonderful childhood pastimes. That's 2? Any others? 3? Okay, fine. His excellence of beauty, it's described in Nectar Devotion, cannot be rivaled anywhere in creation. He is the most beautiful, and we have 1 more. His devotees. He is surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. So the most exalted devotees in the material or spiritual world, in all the everywhere, are Krishna's devotees. And we know, as we see in Vrindavan, and those topmost devotees, the gopis, who exhibit the absolute highest level of Godhead, these are only the devotees of Krishna. So again, we have the most exalted devotees, we have his supreme beauty, his wonderful pastimes, including childhood pastimes, and his beautiful flute playing, which attracts everyone in the universe. So that's Krishna. Krishna has this wonderful attractive quality. And of course, Krishna is also called Bhagavan. He is complete in all 6 opulences. The verse from the Vishnu Purana, Parasara Muni, says, Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashaya shriya jnana vairaga yaschaiva sanam bhaga itingana. I'm sorry, I didn't kind of murder the Sanskrit on there. Anyway. Translation. I can do English a little better. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parasara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation, is therefore called Bhagavan. There are many persons who are rich, powerful, beautiful, famous, learned, and detached, but no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc., entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna is Bhagavan, and this is one of the definitions of Bhagavan, one who has all opulences. Now, when Krishna was on this earth in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka, he exhibited these opulences in many of his pastimes. So now we're going to give you an opportunity. Think of some ways or pastimes where Krishna demonstrated his great opulences. Let's start with wealth. How did Krishna demonstrate the opulence of wealth? Let's go back to Daiva. Go ahead. Oh, by the way, welcome. Daiva's from Hawaii. He's visiting us today. Glad to see you. Thank you, Daiva.
And each of them had Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka.
Yeah.
The opulence of the 16,000 palaces and the bedsteads and the gold and the jewels and the diamonds and everything. And then Prabhupada gives a nice class about just the chariot boots alone in the battlefield of Kurukshetra had so much gold, and he's asking the devotees at the price of gold. And so just, you know, the opulence of the jewels that were there during Krishna's pastimes.
Amazing opulence. We couldn't even imagine, not speak of the gold, the jewels, but think about someone who has a very elaborate, fancy palace, some king or like that. We think a person is very rich if they had one palace. What to speak of 16,108 palaces, completely equipped. So, you know, these things are, you know, beyond anything materially imagined. Any other examples of wealth? Ajay? I'm taking hands.
I was thinking that he was raised by Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj had lots and lots of cows.
How many? How many billion? 900,000. That's quite a few.
That's opulence.
And that's the Vaishya community. That's not the, you know, that's yeah. That's just him personally. I heard there's something about the number of cows and was in the billions, wasn't it? Total billions of cows. Yeah, amazing wealth. Okay, we get the idea. Very, very wealthy. What is strength? It's an easy one. Okay, students, how did Krishna show his strength?
Lifting Govardhan Hill.
Very good. When he lifted Govardhan Hill, what did he do? Did he get some big crane and hold it up? What did he lift it with? A little finger, right. With one left hand, a little pinky finger lifted. Held up an entire mountain. Pretty strong. What else? Killed the seven bulls, yeah. Very good. Others? I suppose you could say all of his demon killing, you know, just, you know, demonstrated great strength. There was nobody who was stronger than him. Right. Anything else? Yes. The elephant. Yes. Nobody could defeat the strength of Kuluyapita. Yes. He wasn't even walking or crawling. He was just laying in the cart. So, which again shows that it has nothing to do with physical, you know, it's nothing material or physical. You know, even as a tiny baby, he could destroy the cart, he could kill the demon. There's Kutana, Trinavarta, all of these when he was very, very young, killed these most powerful demons. Exhibited so much strength. Any others? Yes. Lifting Govardhan Hill, yeah, that was mentioned. Okay, how about fame? Think about, how can we see Krishna's fame? This one's a little trickier. What's that? We are still talking about Krishna, yes. 5,000 years later, what were you going to say? That's a great example. Rukmini had never seen Krishna, but because she heard about him and heard his glories, he was so famous that she wanted nobody else for her husband. Great. Akanda.
Out of all the demigods and celebrated personalities that she would have chosen as a Rajasuya sacrifice,
he was chosen Rajasuya sacrifice as the most worthy person of worship. You know, all the demigods, all the sages, all these great, great personalities recognized him. Yeah. Go ahead, Mama. They still have to say God, yes. Yeah. You know, Prabhupada says to Maggot, I actually wrote this down. This is from the Perfection Yoga Chapter 6, which kind of goes with both a couple of you have said. Prabhupada said, one may be famous in a family, in a town, in a country, or on one planet, but no one is famous throughout the creation as is Sri Krishna. The leaders of the world may be famous for a few years only, but Lord Sri Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago and is still being worshipped. And then also Prabhupada goes on to say that everybody knows God. I mean, when you think about it, in every religion and every culture, you know, there's some conception of a supreme, some conception of something absolute or something higher. And almost every single culture you'll find this throughout the world, and that's God. So God is the most famous personality of anyone. Yeah, go ahead, Aaron. Yeah. Yeah, we should have had the microphone for that one. This was a good example when the children of the Brahmin all died, and Arjuna had to try to save them, and he enlisted Krishna to help him, and they had to go all the way to Mahavishnu to get the children back. And the reason why was because Mahavishnu, who was, of course, the creator, the source of the entire universe, wanted to see Krishna. So he arranged that so he could have the darshan of Krishna. That's pretty famous. Okay. How about beauty? Krishna has some beauty, a little bit. I don't know if we can think of a specific pastime or a quote or anything. Yes. Oh, Krishna's most beautiful when he's surrounded by his devotees. Yes. Go ahead. The everlasting mine of all beauty, and from that beauty, everything else emanates? All beauty emanates? I think I got that, too. So we have the microphone. I want to make sure we repeat something. Rekhanda, did you know? From his beauty, yeah. Anybody remember that one? I remember something like that about stones melt in the presence of the beauty of. Yeah. Where? Okay, one in the back. Let's go sit. From Brahma Samhita, right? Tells us. Do you want to? Let's hear it again over the microphone.
Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. That he's more attractive than millions and millions of cupids.
Very good. You know, this is used in several verses I found where they talk about comparing Krishna to Cupid. Obviously, Cupid is an emblem of beauty. I'm not exactly sure. One more. Trivikram?
Amazed when they see him.
Like who, I'm sorry, we missed the beginning. Who's amazed?
The animals, like the deer, cock. Animals. They would not stop staring at him.
In fact, yeah. Sometimes they'd even be stunned.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Actually, they'd just look at him nonstop.
Okay. Couple more. We got nothing? Oh, that sounded really good, but I don't think we heard it real well. Say it slowly and I'll repeat it. His moon-like face is a drinking vessel for the eyes who hanker for eyes that hanker after all that's beautiful. Beautiful. Where is he from?
His
third canto.
His body is compared has 24 and a half moons or 25 and a half moons corresponding to the Kama Gayatri Mantra. So his forehead is half a moon, his cheeks are, and his toenails are moon, so his whole body is.
Yes. So all these descriptions comparing to the moon, which is another emblem of beauty, and of course he surpasses the beauty of the moon.
There are also a few stories where Krishna will like see himself and he's taken aback.
I was just reading one this morning, I was looking at Nectar Devotion, was describing this, yeah, where he saw his reflection. And was marveling at, you know, the beauty. And then and the Prabhupada says in that, or I don't know if it's in the verse, that actually even Krishna's reflection is not different than him. Because everything is absolute, so his reflection is the same as Krishna. You know, the same beauty was there. Yeah, that's great. Good story. Okay, we got, who's that? Madhavati back there? Yeah. Is the microphone nearby? I have to do some running here. Hey, I didn't know so many people had so many great quotes about his beauty.
The Shrutis, they were attracted to Krishna, you know, beauty and his relationship with the gopis, that they wanted to...
Okay, so the Shrutis were like personified Vedas or whatever.
Yeah.
Were so attracted to Krishna's beauty that they came, they took birth as gopis because of their attraction to him. Yeah, because yeah, they couldn't in that lifetime. Gaurvani, where is he? Wait, I can't see him. Oh, I didn't know you were here. Gaurvani, welcome to Alachua.
Hare
Krishna.
So I know that Shri Radha Shyam are the most beautiful ladies in the world.
Yes. Thank you for confirming.
But in Washington, D.C., our deities are Radha, Madan, Mohan.
And I served there for a couple of years, and I agree. They're right up there.
And Madan Mohan means the one who enchants Cupid himself. Right? So that's one of the signs of Krishna's beauty, that Cupid himself is...
attracted to Krishna.
Yeah, attracted to Krishna, you know, conquered by Krishna. And the only other one I wanted to share was that pastime when Krishna is meeting the wives of the brahmanas.
Mm-hmm.
And the description there is very beautiful. He has lotus flowers behind his ears. He's twirling a lotus flower. It's like one of the most beautiful descriptions of when Krishna twirls the lotus forward, it means that I am attracted to you. And when he twirls it backwards, it means please come to me. A beautiful description.
Very symbolic, the twirling that flower. Thank you. Very nice. Maybe one or two more, then I think we better go on. We've got some other opulences to cover here. One more, Pranav Govinda.
I just wanted to say that in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is given all vision. He sees every single form, all things, both terrifying and that we would, I have to assume, beautiful. But all he wants to see is the original Krishna after seeing every other option that is there.
Yes. Again, confirming Krishna's beauty is supreme and, you know, most desirable. Brian gets the last comment on beauty.
Srila Prabhupada says, if you take the most beautiful girl of this world, Srila Prabhupada says, to heaven, she will look like an ugly frog. And if you take the most beautiful girl of heaven to Vaikuntha, she will look like an ugly frog. Because the Vaikuntha Lakshmis are so beautiful. And that Vaikuntha Lakshmis, they can never build their Narayan, who is so beautiful, always supersede. Sukhdev Goswami mentioned 3 times that Rukmini, they try to control Krishna in Dwarka, but fail. When they come, Krishna's beauty supersedes their beauty. And that Krishna's beauty is above all beauties. So Jiva Goswami Pad give a little story, that whole world enchanted by the Cupid, because any attraction between men and women, because of the Cupid, and there is no other. And when that Cupid came to see Krishna in Vrindavan, first glimpse of Krishna's side view, just the his cheek, the Cupid fainted. Then he woke up, and then next vision of Krishna seeing his beautiful face, he surrendered and prayed, please make me a girl so I can serve you. I enchanted the whole world, including Shiva and Brahma, but I could never find a person. He himself is a man's body, but he wants to be a girl so he could serve Krishna.
Again, Madan Mahan, attractor Cupid. And I'll finish with one quote from the Nectar Devotion, chapter 26. The gopis say, Krishna is the killer of the attraction of Cupid, and as such, he disturbs the patience of all newly married girls. Krishna's bodily features have become so exquisite, it is as if they were all manifesting an artistic sense of the highest sort. His dancing eyes have dimmed the brilliance of the most expert dancer, and so there is no longer any comparison to the beauty of Krishna. This is actually a description as he was entering into the Kishore age. Okay, what about knowledge? How does Krishna exhibit that he is the supreme in knowledge? Or how do we What are some quotes on that? Okay, let's go.
It says, Vedaischa Sarvairaham Evavedyo Vedanta Krit Vedavi Vedacham. So he's the compiler of the Vedas, okay. And he knows the Vedas as they are.
Right, and also 15:15, he says, I'm seeing everyone's heart. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So, yes. Next one. We can't hear. Standing at Sandipani Muni School. Arts are subject of knowledge, yes. By hearing once in Sandipani Muni School, Krishna remembered everything, learned all of the different arts and skills and areas of knowledge. Yes, Gandhi?
He says to Arjuna that he's taught the same knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, the science of self-realization, to the son god Vivasvan, to his son Ikshvaku, and now to Arjuna. So time and time again, he's coming and giving us all the knowledge.
So our understanding is that all knowledge is coming from Krishna. It's also, as Kriya Prabhupada says, that that's his chit potency, the potency of knowledge. That's all coming from Krishna. So Krishna is the source of all knowledge. Anything that we know, anything that we can know about, any knowledge that is there is all coming from Krishna. He is that original source. Okay, and we have renunciation. Think of some examples or pastimes of showing Krishna's renunciation in the back there. Use the microphone there.
Krishna went from Vrindavana to Mathura, leaving his dearest gopis.
He left Vrindavan. He left all the gopis and went to Mathura. Yes. That showed his renunciation. Any others here? Let's get some others here. Okay, we've got one in the back again. This one.
During the Rasa dance, when the gopis developed a little pride, then Krishna just left and disappeared.
Yes. He left all the gopis in the Rasa dance, completely just sort of walked away, showing that although this was his greatest enjoyment and pleasure, he also could walk away from it. You know, he was not attached. One more. Oh, the Shamataka, at the end of it, after all of that intrigue, finally he just gives it back, you know, gives it away. I was thinking there's one other one, which is kind of famous because there's a particular name that Krishna has that describes his renunciation. This is a pastime with Jarasandha. Ranchur, yes, remember? Actually, I'll read this. This is from a Bhagavad Gita lecture in Mumbai. Prabhupada says, just see Bhagavan's renunciation. If we then I'm going to read the Ranchur. If we construct a building, we become attached to it. But Krishna has constructed the whole universe, and still he does not claim it for himself. And this is only one universe. There are millions of universes. So Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the creator of all of these universes. Still, he does not come here except occasionally, and he does not claim it for himself. He has given them for you to use. You wanted to enjoy the material world? All right, I give it to you. Enjoy. Now, this is from the Krishna book about Krishna the Ranchur. Meanwhile, Jarasandha again attacked Mathura, this time with bigger divisions of soldiers, numbering 23 Akshohinis. Lord Sri Krishna wanted to save Mathura from the 18th attack of the great military divisions of King Jarasandha. To prevent further killing of soldiers and to attend to other important business, Lord Krishna left the battlefield without fighting. Actually, he was not at all afraid, but he pretended to be an ordinary human being frightened by the immense quantity of soldiers and resources of Jarasandha. Due to this pastime, Krishna is known as Ranachur, which means one who has left the battlefield. We can know that Krishna, the Ranchuraji, left the battlefield not because he was afraid, but because he had some other purpose. The purpose, as it will be revealed, was to attend to a confidential letter sent by Rukmini, his future first wife. Krishna's leaving the battlefield is a display of one of his six opulences. Krishna is the supreme powerful, supreme wealthy, supreme famous, supreme wise, supreme beautiful. Similarly, he is the supreme renouncer. Srimad Bhagavatam clearly states he left the battlefield in spite of having ample military strength, Therefore, his leaving the battlefield is an example of his supermost opulence renunciation. So, Krishna, of course, we see is unique amongst all incarnations, manifestations, expansions, plenary expansions. He has his very, very special qualities. He has the special qualities that enhance the loving relationships of his devotees. So, of course, his purport later that we read today, Prabhupada describes the entanglement of the living entities, talks about karma and karma phalam, our actions and the fruits of those actions, the reactions to all of our activities. And Prabhupada says that suffering of the living entity, experiencing all these reactions, is due to one thing, our forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. So through hearing and chanting Krishna's glories, on special days, particularly like these festival days, appearance days, we become attracted to Krishna. We start to remember our relationship with Krishna, act in that relationship, and thus we will become delivered. Of course, we try to understand Krishna to the best of our abilities, but we are very limited, finite, minute jiva souls. So we can never understand the glories of Krishna in full. Even Lord Brahma, who is the most intelligent, actually, he's the most intelligent living in the universe. So intelligent, he needs several heads to contain all that brain power. And even he cannot understand Krishna. And one of the most beautiful verses, I think, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.7, the prayers to Brahma, he describes this. He says, in time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities? So, we can't estimate the glories of Krishna, but we can get a little sample of them. We can get a little bit of understanding. And we've been so fortunate that, as somebody said earlier, that we are understanding a little bit about a Krishna due to the grace of his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, who brought Krishna to this Western world, who gave us the Krishna book, who gave us the Srimad Bhagavatam, who actually instilled this love of Krishna for those of us who knew nothing about Krishna. We had no understanding, no way of knowing Krishna. But now we have a little bit of knowledge. And through our service to Krishna and hearing and chanting about Krishna, that love can develop and that understanding can develop. I think we have 5 minutes. I'm just going to close by actually reading from the third canto of the, the 10th canto, third chapter, The Birth of Lord Krishna. So, this is Krishna's appearance. Therefore, at the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did the stars like Ashvini. The sun, the moon, and the other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with the towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs, full of lilies and lotuses, were extraordinarily beautiful. And the trees and green plants, full of flowers and leaves, pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to blow, pleasing the sense of touch and bearing on the aroma of flowers. And when the Brahmas engaged in ritualistic ceremonies, ignited their fires according to Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and Brahmins had always been disturbed by demons like Kamsa and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts, and kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary systems. The Kanaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The citizen Charanas offered auspicious prayers, and the Vidyadharis, along with the Apsaras, began to dance in jubilation. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and the clouds gathered in the sky, very mild, and the sky very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who was situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was of the same category as Sri Krishna. Vasudeva then saw the newborn child who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes and who bore in his four hands the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Srivats, and on his neck the brilliant Kastoba gem. Dressed in yellow, his body blackish like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with a valuable gem by Durya, the child, decorated brilliant belt, armlets, bangles, and other ornaments, appeared very wonderful. When Vasudeva saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them amongst the Brahmins as a transcendental festival. O Maharaj Parikit, descendant of King Bharata, Vasudeva could understand that this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. Having concluded this without a doubt, he became fearless, bowing down with the child to the child with folded hands, and concentrating his attention, he began to offer prayers to the child who illuminated his birthplace by his natural influence. Vasudeva said, "My Lord, you are the Supreme Person beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly." Bye. All glories to Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna Janmashtami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I think we're ready for our Abhishek ceremony. Thank you all very much. Yeah.